Welcome to The Critique. Today we are digging into a collection of academic papers from studies in social justice that argue for a life value approach over our current money value system. So let's just jump right into the feedback.
Right. So looking at the overall text, the material's heavy reliance on specialized philosophical nomenclature, such as life value ontoaxiology, creates an immediate barrier to entry for the non-academic reader.
Yeah, it really does. I mean, you open the first essay by Noonan and then the deep dive by McMurtry, and you are just hit almost immediately with these incredibly dense compound terms.
Exactly. You get life value ontoaxiology, money sequence value syntax, and agent relative ontology all right up front.
Which, you know, for a philosopher, those are precise coordinates. They tell you exactly where you are on the map.
Sure, but is there a risk that focusing solely on that precision completely overlooks the urgency of the actual message?
Right, because as I understand it, the goal here is to wake the reader up to a crisis, an eco-genocidal crisis, as they put it?
Exactly, and that is exactly where the weakness lies, right in the friction of that language. The reader is spending significant cognitive drag just decoding the vocabulary.
Yeah, you have to pause and unpack ontoaxiology.
Right, like, okay, ontology is being, axiology is value. You have to do that math before you can even process the argument that a corporation is destroying a water table.
Which risks alienating the exact audience they need. I mean, if the target audience includes activists, policymakers, or even just engaged citizens trying to defend the civil commons, this vocabulary acts like a gatekeeper.
It pushes them away before they can grasp the weapon you are trying to hand them.
So the suggestion here for improvement is to adopt a sort of Trojan horse approach to the terminology.
Oh, I like that image.
Yeah, the idea is to introduce the concrete concept first, the physical reality, and apply the label only after the reader intuitively understands the mechanism.
So you're saying front-load the universal physical reality before the metaphysical categorization.
Exactly. For a concrete example, instead of introducing the concept as life value ontoaxiology right out of the gate, start with the specific end criterion examples that are actually found way later in the text.
Oh, right. That visceral list they have.
Yeah. The fact that you cannot live 6 minutes without air, a day without water, or a week without food.
That is a biological absolute. It is undeniably real.
Right. And if you rephrase the introduction to focus on that common live ground as a physical reality first, you hook the reader with a reality they literally feel in their own lungs.
And then once they agree that, yes, air is a primary value, then you can tell them, hey, this is what we call the life value.
Exactly. It asks them to agree to a physical fact before asking them to agree to a philosophical theory.
That is a great fix. And we can actually do the same thing with the economic jargon, too, like when discussing the money sequence.
Because introducing it as a ruling value syntax is pretty abstract.
Very abstract. But later on, they introduce it via the concrete example of the Dodge versus Ford Motor Company court case.
Oh, the 1919 case, right.
Exactly, where the court literally ruled that a corporation cannot prioritize community benefits over shareholder profit. The law compelled them to prioritize money over life.
Which is a shocking story.
It is. And if you lead with that concrete narrative, the reader is outraged. They understand the mechanism instantly. Then when you introduce the term money sequence value syntax, it isn't jargon anymore.
It's just a name for the villain they already recognize.
Exactly. You ground the theory in history rather than philosophy.
Moving on to the second major point of our review. The characterization of the global corporate system is occasionally monochromatic, potentially framing the argument as a conspiracy rather than a structural critique.
Yeah, I really wonder how this tone affects the skeptical reader, because the text uses some highly charged language.
Oh, absolutely. Phrases like unseen war, the cancer stage of capitalism, eco-genocidal regimes.
Right, and soulless mega-machine or gang of four rhetoric when referring to corporate persons. Now, I mean, McMurtry provides rigorous evidence for these claims. The data is definitely there.
But the tone itself feels heavily polemical. It almost reads like a manifesto at times.
Precisely. And the weakness there is the risk of triggering a defensive reaction in moderate readers.
Right. If someone picks us up who maybe works in a corporate setting but cares about social justice, they might view this as us versus them rhetoric.
Rather than a diagnostic analysis of a broken system. If you paint the adversary as a mustache-twirling villain, you lose the people who see the world in shades of gray.
and it might undercut the scientific objectivity the authors are claiming regarding the N criterion.
Right. If you claim your theory is based on objective biological fact, but your language is highly emotional and accusatory, you dilute your authority.
So the suggestion for improvement here is to shift the rhetorical focus from malice to mechanism.
Frame the corporation rights system not as an evil entity, but as a misprogrammed algorithm, or a system operating on flawed code that is simply blind to biological reality.
Right. Use the life-blind concept more clinically. Instead of accusing corporations of waging war, focus on the text's own point about systemic autism or blindness.
That is such a crucial distinction. It's not that the corporation hates you. It's that it literally cannot see you. It lacks the sensors to detect biological reality.
To give a concrete example of how to implement this, look at the Pareto optimality principle mentioned in the text.
The economic rule where if the rich get richer and the poor stay the same, it's considered optimal.
Exactly. Highlight that specific mechanism. Explain how this economic rule mathematically ignores suffering.
Because the rich gained and the poor didn't strictly lose money, even if they are losing their actual lives.
Right. So you just show the reader the math and say, look, the equation is missing a variable for human life.
You don't need to call them a gang of four if you just show how the flawed code works.
And you can use the externalities argument for this too. Focus on how the system is structurally incapable of recognizing life capital loss, like the ozone layer or aquifers, simply because they have no price tag.
Rather than implying a conscious, evil desire to destroy them, it makes the argument diagnostic rather than prosecutorial.
Which changes the dynamic from a battle to a repair job. That's much more inviting for a policy-minded reader.
Let's shift gears a bit to the structure and the bridge to practice.
Okay.
The connection between the high-level philosophy of rights and the practical application of the civil commons is currently too delayed in the manuscript structure.
Yeah, this is a significant pacing weakness. The manuscript is very top-heavy with the critique of John Rawls and abstract definitions of rights.
And the most compelling, relatable content is buried.
The civil commons itself. The reader has to wade through pages of theory about the difference principle before realizing that civil commons refers to tangible things they use every single day.
Like sidewalks, libraries, sewage systems, and universal healthcare. Right. I just worry that by the time we actually get to the solution, the reader is already exhausted from the theoretical deconstruction.
So the suggestion is to integrate the civil commons examples immediately alongside the theoretical critique to ground the abstract arguments.
Use the civil commons as the lens through which to critique Rawls, rather than critiquing Rawls to eventually get to the civil commons.
For a concrete example, when they first discuss the life value theory, they should immediately cite the specific examples of civil commons successes they bring up much later.
Like the London sewer systems.
Exactly. Or the universal literacy programs, or pathways for bicycles.
That London sewer example is fantastic, by the way. It saved more lives than any medical intervention in history, and it was a public work.
It was the civil commons in action. And if you bring that up early, the reader thinks, oh, I know what this is about. It's about public infrastructure versus privatization.
It gives them a hook.
We also need to bring the Hurricane Katrina example to the forefront. Use the breakdown of New Orleans infrastructure to illustrate exactly what happens when the civil commons are stripped by private money sequence forces.
Yes. Show the levees failing because of a lack of public investment first. Then explain why they failed using the theory. Anchor the abstract life blindness in a flooded city.
And we can juxtapose the civil commons directly against the corporate food system examples from Jennifer Summer's section earlier.
Oh, the people's restaurants in Brazil.
Right. Serving nutritious meals for 50 cents.
Show how a civil commons approach changes a specific meal versus the corporate approach of pseudo-foods causing obesity.
It makes the distinction razor sharp. You oscillate between theory and concrete example. Theory and concrete example.
It stops the reader from having to wait for the payoff.
Exactly. Now, let's look closely at how they engage with opposing views, specifically the Rawls critique.
Right.
The dismissal of John Rawls and the liberal tradition is thorough, but assumes the reader is already skeptical of them, missing an opportunity to dismantle the opposing argument on its own terms.
Yeah, this is a real weakness if you're trying to win over new people. The text argues that Rawls is abstracted from what matters and that his primary goods, like income, are disconnected from life needs.
Which, for us, makes sense. But for a reader steeped in liberal philosophy, simply saying Rawls is life blind might not be enough to unseat his authority.
They might just think, well, Rawls has the difference principle. He cares about the poor. The critique needs to be sharper.
Right. It needs to show exactly where Rawls' logic breaks down when faced with the end criterion.
So the suggestion is to conduct a direct stress test of Rawls' theory using the end criterion within the text.
Don't just say Rawls is wrong. Show the absurdity of his conclusions when applied to biological reality.
For example, use the text's own distinction between money and life goods.
Right. Show a specific scenario where Rawls' difference principle, where inequality is okay if it helps the poor, utterly fails.
Because the help is in money, but the cost is in life goods. Like the poor have slightly more income, but the water table they rely on is poisoned by the industry providing that income.
According to Rawls, justice is served there because they have more primary goods.
But according to the end criterion, they are dying.
Highlight that specific contradiction. Rawls lists income and wealth as primary. The critique should explicitly ask the reader,
can you drink income?
Exactly. Can you breathe wealth? If you have $1 million but no clean air, are you better off?
It exposes the life blindness as a technical description of his theory, not just an insult. His theory literally cannot see the air.
You can also contrast Rawls' rational plan of life against the text's definition of human vocation.
Right. Rawls assumes this careerist trajectory on a stable planet. The authors critique this as a closure of potential, but the stronger critique is the biological one.
A rational plan of life is impossible in a collapsing ecosystem. You cannot plan a career on a dead planet.
Exactly. And the text offers human vocation, doing value for others, as the alternative. It frames the life value approach not just as more moral, but as more realistic.
It frames liberalism as the fantasy,
which wins over the liberal reader by validating their goal of fairness, but proving their method is completely obsolete in the face of ecological limits.
This has been a really productive dissection. Let's do a quick recap of the main actionable feedback points for the listener.
Sounds good.
First, translation. Replace the ontologological jargon with biological reality examples immediately to lower the barrier to entry. Use the end criterion of air, water, and food first, and apply the philosophical labels later.
Second is reframing. Move from a language of war and evil to a language of blind mechanisms and flawed code to persuade skeptics. Use the Pareto optimality principle to show how the math itself ignores suffering.
Third, restructuring. Put in the civil commons examples, like the sidewalks, libraries, sewers, and those people's restaurants, to the front to ground the abstract theory.
And fourth, sharpening. Critique Rawls not just for being abstract, but for being biologically impossible. Contrast income directly with survival by asking those hard questions.
We invite you to take this manuscript back and use the end criterion as an editorial lens. If a sentence doesn't serve the reader's understanding of life needs, cut or clarify it.
And definitely submit the revised work back to us for a follow-up critique.
We would love to see it. Thanks for listening to The Critique, and we will catch you next time.